joining the crew at the Geek Tank. At the Geek Tank, the Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
Hi, I'm Guy.
Hi, I'm Troy.
And this is Geek Tank on the Go,
your tricorder-sized podcast.
So we're here today at Starbucks, our favorite Starbucks.
Our usual hangout.
Yeah, our usual hangout.
Side note on Starbucks, I believe they're going to start declaring them, or they may have already started declaring them, as safe spaces.
Interesting.
So if
they're also good recording spaces.
They are good. They're safe for recording.
Safe for recording.
But that just means somewhere safe, that if someone's feeling, you know, persecuted for, you know, I think it's specifically targeted for the LGBT community type thing, but
it's that makes sense.
Somewhere that they can go.
Yep.
Which I remember McDonald's being like one of the first safe spaces for like runaway kids and that are abused children type thing.
They had that safe space logo or icon or whatever that was. Yeah.
But way to go, Starbucks.
Yeah. Way to go, Starbucks.
So there, I had to throw that in there because it's something.
So we're in a safe space.
Yes.
And we're going to do a podcast today on a topic that I really hate, Star Trek.
Guy despises this topic.
I despise this Star topic.
Star topic's probably a podcast title, a name for a podcast.
And if it's not, it should be.
Yeah.
And that's free. You can
just
take that one.
Would it be about stars in the sky or like celebrity stars? It's probably about celebrity stars because that gets a lot more
views.
More listens. Ears. But yes, we were like figuring out what topic do we want to talk about. And I'm like, well, you know, we haven't actually dived into Star Trek this show. And
no, we really haven't.
50% of the podcast hosts being Star Trek aficionados.
50% of all podcast hosts of this show approve of Star Trek.
Yep. The other 50% approve to a lesser degree.
Right.
But there is
approval. The other 50% are waiting for Rogue One.
Yeah. Nah, I like Star Trek.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, to me, someone saying they don't like Star Trek is like saying they don't like music. It's like there's so many different flavors of Star Trek in its own universe that means they clearly only watched one Star Trek and gave up on all the others without realizing there's a diversity amongst all the Star Trek shows.
What's interesting is I just read this book, which is it's the 50-year mission, and there's two books to it. There's the first 25 years, and there's the second 25 years.
That makes sense.
And essentially, it's broken up by the original series and the movies, cut, then Next Gen, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and Enterprise. So,
which 25 years did you read?
Which 25 years of what?
Which 25 years did you read?
I read the second 25
years. The second
25 years, because Mariah found it at the library. My wife. She found it at the library, and brought it home because she said, you'll like this. And I read it and it was just like awesome. What it essentially is it's these guys interviewed people throughout Star Trek over the last 50 years. So they've got interviews from everybody. I mean, and it's just an astonishing number of, I mean, a lot of the people they have interviews for on these shows are gone, like Gene Roddenberry and D. Kelly and,
right.
And, you know, and so it's like, it was really great reading about them. And it was about, you know, they had it in chronological order. So the book that I read started with, we're going to make a new television series called Star Trek The Next Generation. We had already been very good with the original show and da-da-da-da-da, and the fans were looking for it. You know, so it starts with Next Gen. Mm-hmm. But then it goes through and talks about all kinds of fascinating stuff about it. So this is also to go good with Mark Cushman's books, which is, you know, these are the Voyages, season 1, 2, and 3, which is all behind the scenes in the original series.
Which there's your reading homework if you're a Trekkie out there and you weren't aware of these books.
Yeah,
definitely something you should check out.
Great books.
So I thought we could start off for our first segment looking, we'll break them in because I figured out there's roughly 9 categories of Star Trek for my purposes right now at this moment. And so the very first Star Trek was the menagerie, which the cage.
Right.
Which explain to people who have no idea about that what the deal is with it having two different names.
Right. So the cage was the original pilot written for Star Trek. And the producers at NBC felt that it was a little too cerebral. There was too much thinking going on. There wasn't enough flying leg kicks. So they never aired The Cage and ultimately got a new pilot called Where No Man Has Gone Before. And since they couldn't get the captain, Jeffrey Hunter, back, they instead hired William Shatner to play the captain. So Where No Man Has Gone Before is considered the first episode of Star Trek in its actual incarnation. Well, they needed a bottle episode somewhere along the line, so they instead took The Cage and cut it up and made it a flashback episode. So it does exist in the actual canon, but the flashback episode's called The Menagerie 1 and 2, and they got two episodes out of it.
I wonder, as far as flashbacks go, if that was like one of the first flashbacks done on TV, or...
I don't know.
I'm sure there are probably others.
Yeah.
It has to be a Dick Van Dyke flashback or something. But.
Well, and it worked really well because it was a different captain, different uniforms. It looked like it was 10 years earlier.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff.
It was 10 so years earlier budget.
Right, 10 years earlier in the budget, 10 years earlier in everything. But it was still familiar enough that it looked like the actual... like it fit in the actual canon
right.
of the show.
And they actually had Nimoy as Spock for that episode, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
So,
yeah. They had Nimoy, and actually they had a whole bunch of people that were in there that stayed. George Takei, and actually I'm not sure whether Takei was in The Cage or not. I don't think he was in The Cage. But
there's so many things I could say about Takei being in a cage, but I'm not going to.
Yes. So, fill in the blanks. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the story behind that.
Yeah, so it's... had a rocky start, which, interestingly enough, Firefly was shown, which is a sci-fi show that a lot of us love, was shown out of order because of that same thing. They didn't fill the very first episode. The pilot was action-y enough for TV.
Yeah.
So then they showed a different episode. So now it was aired out of order because
right.
of that.
Right.
This isn't action-y enough. There's too much thinking and talking and character development.
Because people don't like to think or talk or have character development.
Which we'll talk about more in our third segment with J.J. Abrams movies.
Yes.
Yeah, TOS definitely launched the ball off and broke a lot of barriers.
Yes.
And
we had
really established what the moral purpose and the ethical purpose of the storyline was.
And when you read Cushman's These Are the Voyages, that's behind the scenes on all of them, you can very much see that from the get-go, Roddenberry had some very firm rules about Star Trek that make the things that make it stand out. And make Trekkies love it, he had firmly established way in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. One, the characters themselves could not internally conflict in any major way. You could sit here and have rough banter of, ha ha ha, Spock, it's all funny, ha ha ha, and stuff like that. But you couldn't have, you know, Kirk hating Spock and, you know, deciding to have a horrible love affair that falls apart with Yeoman Rand mm-hmm. or anything like that. Two, it had to be positive and upbeat. View of the future. In the future, these people were over all of bigotry and all of their horrible, you know, the horrible things, sexism and racism and all of that stuff was a thing of the past. And that's clear in a couple of episodes. The Savage Curtain, when they beam Abraham Lincoln aboard and he looks at Uhura and says, "You have a negress on the bridge?" And she just looks at him and he's like, "You don't say that now, do you?" And she's like, "No, we've gotten past that." And it's like, it's a great moment in
right.
the 60s where we have a black woman saying, mm-hmm. "No, we've gotten a little past that now."
Right.
We're past that.
Because at the
That's
time of the 60s, there are still people who were in the 60s mindset.
Right. Nichelle Nichols always talks about meeting Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin Luther King saying, you know, she was ready to quit Star Trek because all she ever did was open hailing frequencies.
Yep.
And Martin Luther King said, "No, stay. You're a black woman on the bridge."
Yep, just by being there.
Just by being
you're,
there.
You're making the right people angry.
Right, and you're making other people realize this is totally normal.
Right.
So that's a story she tells all the time, mm-hmm. and, you know, this is before King
and
got assassinated.
And there's a lot more to her story in Star Trek, too. You should definitely look it up.
Yes.
So much great stuff was done with that. And they would have episodes veiled as a social issue. Let That Be Your Last Battlefield.
Right.
Since we're talking about race.
The half-black, half-white people.
Which is kind of the Dr. Seuss, star-bellied Sneetches kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's...
Well, and it's got the famous lines of, well, yeah, but he's black on the left side of his face.
Mm-hmm.
Where everybody's like, well, that's just stupid.
Right.
And of course, then you look at it and you go, wait a minute. They're all just stupid, aren't they?
Yeah.
Get it now. You know, I follow. There's a lot of stuff like that. And that was one of the things that the newer books sort of implied. They lost a little bit of that focus with this. And we'll get back to that when we talk about Star Trek Discovery.
Yep.
In the third
segment.
It just
occurred to me that in today's climate, with the horrible stuff going on with the political situation, we need a Star Trek.
We do. We need a Star Trek back.
We need something there helping break a lot of this mess.
Well, and break it down and make it easy to understand. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that.
So there was an anime.
There was a little animated series that was done by Filmation.
I'm going to briefly mention, but not very much.
No, and it was the nice thing about it, and I'll just real quickly note this because we are about to go for a break.
Yep.
But one of the things that's interesting about the Filmation animated series was that it was written by the same writers that wrote the original series. So they all still had a message. They all still had they were following all of the rules and everything like that.
They got the same voice actors.
Yeah, they got the same voice actors, and they weren't bad. The animation's horrible.
Right.
But the stories were solid. So that's an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come back after this break to discuss Next Gen.
Hi, this is Nana Visitor, Major Kira Norris of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and you are listening to Geek Tank.
And we're back.
So we're discussing Star Trek.
We just covered the original series and the anime.
Now we're going to move to the next gen.
Which I was hoping we could fit in the first 10 minutes, but it didn't happen. So we'll see where this goes. This might be an extra long episode, or we might just cheat some of these.
Now, you
came in before Next Gen.
Yes.
Because you came in on the syndicated episodes of Trek.
Right. I was watching Star Trek when I was four. So in the 70s, I was watching Star Trek. I was a Trekkie when I don't remember a time when I wasn't a Trekkie. I really don't.
Mm-hmm. For me, it didn't hit until I was a teenager with Next Gen. I don't know why, but Trek wasn't on in my house. I'm fairly certain my brother is probably watching it, but there's a good chance he wasn't watching it at our house, maybe with the friends.
Right.
Which meant I wasn't there to watch it. But with Next Gen, when that started, the very first episode, my brother, myself, all of his friends, it was an event.
Right.
And
that's Encounter at Farpoint.
Yep. I mean, it's an event for us in real life.
Yeah.
It was like a sort of like a party.
Yeah.
And then it became a thing of every week you are there to watch it, because unless you had one of the lucky people who had a VHS recorder and could record it and watch it later. But for the most part, we all watched it live. Well, not live, but when it aired.
Right.
Because who knew how long it was going to be before you could catch it again. And they did a good job of carrying on Roddenberry's vision.
Yeah. Yeah, although the first two seasons are...
With manskirts.
Manskirts. And reading the books for behind the scenes, I can kind of see why.
Mm-hmm. Now, at that point, the manskirts seem ridiculous. But there's now, I think, a good reason to have it.
Yeah.
Because it's to point out there shouldn't be gender labels.
Well, that's what it was all about.
It was, but it was too far ahead of its time at that point.
Yeah, Roddenberry was making a lot of statements. Mm-hmm. He had put all of his... When in the original series, he put all of his women in skirts, and they were short, and it was all because to appease the audience of the time. And when we got to Next Gen, he decided to make that gender equal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, now people wear kilts, and it's not an uncommon thing to see utility kilts around and stuff like that. And it's similar in the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that, yeah, the man skirts were a little weird, but... Interesting, and a good statement to be making, even if it was a little weird.
And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, you have to watch that first episode.
You have to watch the first episode.
Which they're all on
during
Netflix.
The saucer separation scenes when it's really actually biggest.
it's all on Netflix at the moment.
It's all on
who
Netflix.
Who knows for how long.
Until it goes to CBS All Access.
Yeah.
Luckily, I have all the episodes of everything because Trekkie. So it's one of those things. But
if the original episode set the precedent for what it's supposed to be, what would you say the big thing that Next Gen brought to the table?
Next Gen tried really hard to keep talking about common issues, and that was harder to do. First of all, we were in the age of excess, as the 80s radio says all the time. It was 1987, and we were doing pretty good all the way across the board. There wasn't a whole lot going on that was able to be discussed. We could still talk about racism, but that had been sort of covered in the original series. Mm-hmm. We could still talk about sexism, also sort of covered in the original series. So it was kind of one of those, they didn't know where to go. So we got a lot of problems with them trying to get the statements, the commentary out there, because there wasn't a lot going on in the 80s at that point that they needed to say.
Right.
What really happened with Next Gen was that they made it go back to an entertainment show. But it didn't happen until really the third season. And I'm still astonished that they let it live two seasons long enough for it to get into third season.
They must not have had enough other stuff to choose from.
Right. But then we got Yesterday's Enterprise, mm-hmm. and then we got Best of Both Worlds 1 and 2. And that's when Next Gen really changes, and it gets deep. And you're like, whoa, now I see what's going on. And that's where they're headed. And that's, unfortunately, that was when Roddenberry lost control of the show. Mm-hmm.
I think the introduction of the Borg was coming back once again to the unknown enemy.
Right.
Which is what we were dealing with more, because with the 80s, more of the fear of, well, what's Russia going to do?
Right.
And what enemies do we have out there that we've yet to discover?
Right. And the problem is that Star Trek VI, the movie, mm-hmm. sort of covered Russia and Klingons as the same thing and fixed them, so to speak, at the end of the movie. So when you get into Next Gen's timeline, they can't really make Russia and Klingon links anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a problem. So they ended up kind of screwing themselves a little on that one. Moving on, though, I mean, then we had Deep Space Nine and...
Now, Deep Space Nine's my favorite out of all of them.
Mine too.
I should say I've seen very, very little of Voyager because the few I saw turned me off of it. And I am going to go back because, you know, on your advice, there are some good episodes. So I
Blink of
go
an
watch.
Eye is a great one. So, Muse, I love.
So I want to go watch the good ones.
Caretaker is not bad, which is the pilot on Voyager. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
But Deep Space Nine, I continued the tradition of watching it as it happened. And then when it hit syndication, I'd rewatch episodes, which is something I hadn't done a lot with Generation.
Right.
But part of an area that I saw Next Gen go into that Deep Space Nine went into even deeper was not the story, as it put equal amount of weight on character development.
Right.
So you had really deep characters with issues and backgrounds that you didn't see hardly at all in TOS, and then somewhat in Next Gen, more so in Deep Space Nine. And definitely was the dark
Star Trek. What's fascinating about that is reading that book.
Yes.
Because they go into that and they start talking to Ira Stephen Bear, who was the showrunner for Deep Space Nine, and they talk to Ron Moore, who moved on to do Battlestar Galactica. And you can see the seeds of Battlestar Galactica in Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is. But really what happened was Deep Space Nine was by itself out there for only one season. It was shared the screen with TNG for the last three seasons of TNG, and then shared with Voyager. So it was always the redheaded stepchild. They were making so much money on Star Trek at that point in time that really, literally, they told the show, we don't care what you do. So Ira Stephen Bear did what he wanted to do, and he ran with it. And he did all these things, and Ron Moore came in and said, what if we start serializing episodes? What if episodes started happening one after another? This had never happened before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, only soap operas did that. And so all of this was really interesting because really what happened was nobody cared what happened to DS9. You know, they had a 7-year contract. They were going to be there for 7 years, like it or not. And so they were left to do whatever they want. And a lot of fans find DS9 to be their favorite.
Yeah, because before you had to basically make it, as you said, an episode on a bottle because you never knew when someone's going to come in and you wanted them to be able to miss a few and catch it.
Right. Well, it's hard on syndication.
Yeah.
Because syndication naturally shows things in random order. And if you've got episodes of Deep Space Nine, really, you have to watch all of fourth season in a whole. Mm-hmm. And all, but Netflix has. I mean, Nana Visitor said that same thing.
Yes.
In a couple, I think she even said it in our interview.
Right.
She was saying Netflix changed everything because now you can sit and watch all of Deep Space Nine in a sitting.
Yes.
And you can binge watch it. And you can see it in order, and it fits.
And you can see the character development and the arcs.
And you can see where everybody's changing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, DS9's a really good series. There's some wonderful ones. Rocks and Shoals, In a Pale Moonlight.
My favorite is Beyond the Stars.
Beyond the Stars, and, where someone's we see Benny.
That's where I would say, if you're going to watch just one, watch that one. I was actually allowed to bring it into my, when I was in college, I brought it into my philosophy class. And I was able to show it as part of a project.
And finally, DS9 got to deal with racism in a way that was direct.
Yes.
And they got to hit you square in the face with it. Mm-hmm. And they did. And not only that, I mean, little things that they were in there. When they look at Major Kira, none of Visitor's character, and say, yeah, you'll have to take the day off too. Because at that point in time, and she, ironically... One of the original writers for Star Trek was Dorothy Fontana, who went by DC Fontana for the exact same reason. Because in the 60s, you couldn't be a woman and write.
Yep.
So as long as she was DC Fontana, nobody knew she was female. And she's one of the key. She wrote some of the best Star Treks. So it's one of those things. So we move on to Voyager.
Yeah,
and like I said, there's a handful of Voyagers that are really, really good. Mm-hmm. There's Lizard Voyager. Don't watch that one.
Okay.
But, the, you know, like The Muse, I liked a lot. There's an episode called Blink of an Eye. And if there's ever a... I call that one of the best Star Trek episodes. It is such a fascinating science fiction concept wrapped in that episode. I love that episode. And it's a bottle episode.
You know, and for those who haven't picked up on it yet, a bottle episode means you can watch it without any previous knowledge of what's going on
right.
in the story. So,
which is not to be confused with the way that the writers write a bottle episode, which means that it's all on the ship.
And they have to drink.
Right, and they have to drink a lot.
Actually, that would be a Windjammer episode.
That'd be a Windjammer episode. It's all bottle episodes. So, I mean, there's some really good ones. And you can see also with Voyager, the same thing. Mm-hmm. They had... Writer problems, and then finally they were let alone. And that's the moment where Janeway's hair finally gets to be somewhere where Kate Mulgrew actually liked it. And they stop messing with her hair. And when they stop messing with her hair, the show gets good. And actually I've discovered, it's so funny, I had the hair rule with Star Trek.
The facial hair.
Yeah, when hair changes, like when Sisko goes bald, and when Riker grows a beard, and when Janeway stops having the stupid bun, well, Star Trek gets better.
What happened in TOS for hair?
I don't know.
Okay.
But the point is that I've always said that, and it turns out that there's actual real reasons for that. That's the point when the studio stops screwing with them. Because the studio was the one that kept making Avery Brooks grow his hair into a fro. And he hated that.
Because they...
And it made him, as an actor, pull back. When they finally let him shave his head so that he was Hawk again. Uh-huh. So
what was the reason for that?
Because they wanted him to look like a normal black guy or whatever. I don't know. But he's so much more... himself.
I can't imagine Sisko with hair.
It's so weird. But it's the same thing with Kate Mulgrew. She hated the bun.
I can't imagine her with hair.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine her with hair either. And with a goatee, she looks great.
Yes.
But it's the same. That's really the thing. I mean, I called it the hair rule for the longest time because I could sense that something changed.
Right.
Well, it turns out that's the time when people stop messing with it. And let the writers just do their own stuff.
Interesting.
And roll by themselves. And so it happened with Next Gen, was when the third season's when Riker grows the beard. It happened with Deep Space Nine, because it was about third or fourth season when Sisko shaved his head. And it happened with Voyager. Enterprise, we'll talk real quick about Enterprise. Enterprise gets good in fourth season. Don't worry
about
the first.
Is there a hair change?
There's not a hair change. There's a writer change. Because instead of it being Brannon Braga, it gets to be under the show running of Manny Coto. And Manny Coto was an old-school Trekkie. I mean, like my generation, old-school Trekkie. And he got the helm of that show, and the first thing he did was go back and visit the Orions, go back and talk about the Vulcan Forge, go back and talk about the augments and why the Klingons don't have ridges, all of that stuff. And that was beautiful. Hmm. And it's because by fourth season, they were just trying to get enough episodes to sell it to syndication. So they didn't care. It was canceled. It was canceled at the end of third season. So they said, we don't care what you do.
Are there only four seasons of it?
There's only four seasons of Enterprise. Okay. And they said, we don't care what you do. You can do whatever you want. We don't care. And yeah. So they went and rolled their own way.
When I started that, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It came out of the gate. Not super strong, but strong enough to keep me with it.
Broken Bow's a good episode, yes.
Which Voyager didn't do. It didn't come out of the gate, knocking me out of the park. So, but Enterprise did. It's like, okay, I'll stick with it. And I can't remember if it was second or third season, but at some point it had lost a lot of momentum and I gave up on it. And I never went back to it. And then I heard, without any spoilers, how it ended. And I'm like, well, that sucks. And so I'm not going to watch it. I am going to go back and watch it because there's good episodes in season
four. Just don't
watch
the last episode.
Yeah. Well, just don't watch the last 10 minutes, as I understand
it. Yeah, don't watch the last 10 minutes of the last episode.
Yeah. So
it really, These Are the Voyages, which is the last episode, really isn't a good episode all the way across the board.
Without spoiling, I'm going to just say it's like the Tribble had a dream, and the whole thing was a dream from a Tribble. It's the way it. That's not what happened, but it's one of those disappointment type things.
No, but so fourth season's beautiful of Enterprise. If you're going to watch it, watch that one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame they didn't get a fifth season. Fifth season, they were going to go into the Romulan War, which would have been awesome.
That would have been cool.
And then the birth of the Federation in sixth season. And that would have been way awesome.
Which also would have been a great title for a episode, The Birth of the Federation.
Yeah, it's actually the title of a good book. Because they moved on to the books.
Well, you have to. So. Well, we're going to go to break. We've ran over a bit, but we'll do that anyway. And when we come back, we'll talk more Trek. Star Trek and covering the whole gambit of it, which means we're not going super deep in any one thing, but we're covering a little bit of everything. That's
which is hard for me.
Screen-wise, because there's so much other stuff besides just the screens, we'd have to do a three-day podcast.
There's a 726 episodes of Star Trek total, and 13 movies. So it's
12 if you don't count the really bad one. Which I'll leave that up to people's own discretion.
Seven if you don't really...
Yeah, seven if you only count the good ones.
Yeah, apparently, somewhere along the line, this is actually one of the interesting side notes. One of the writers of Futurama ended up on Enterprise as one of the writing staff. And he was... And they it was funny because there was a joke where they were talking about the Church of Star Trek. And, you know, it was like, you know, 79 episodes, 30 good ones, you know, and it was like the joke. And it was like, and he's like, I wrote that line and I'm a Trekkie. And I wrote that line and I thought it was hysterical. And the Trekkies have just barbecued me over it. And they're like, they hate that line. And I'm like, and me personally, I'm like, no, that's a hysterical commentary because really, Spock's brain was not a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to go into...
The last three we have, we're going to cover a little bit of fan films because there's some really good ones out there.
They really are. And, like Starship Farragut, but I'm biased.
You are. And it's they're worth taking a look at. And when you take into account these people are paying for a lot of this out of their own pocket and what they could source fund, because you're not allowed to make money on it. It's not your property.
Right.
The sets they pulled together and what they were able to do is really good. They had some of their Trekkies. They had Trekkie stories they wanted to tell. And they're out there.
There's some really sad stuff, too. I mean, the guys that do Phase 2, which are also really good guys, they're out of Ticonderoga, New York. They built a complete duplicate of the sets. And because they were fan films, and because of all of the stuff that was going on, when we revisited We revisited the original series in Enterprise. they couldn't go to the sets. They had to build new sets. And it was so funny because it was like, you could have had perfectly usable sets.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yeah, so there's some fan ones worth checking out. And I was inspired. I've yet to make a fan film, but I had an idea I've been working on with Guy, and that would fall under the fan film category. But then the whole thing of it's all got to come out of pocket. So
yeah, that became kind of a problem.
But I would recommend if you go out there and look for them, they're worth checking out if you are into Star Trek. And as Guy had mentioned, a couple of them, there's Phase 2 and
yeah,
Farragut's,
Phase 2 is good. Farragut's Star, good.
Starship Farragut.
Yeah. So there are some real good ones out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them out there that we're not mentioning. And we're not mentioning them because we hate them, just because there's so many of them to cover that we don't actually get into all of them. We've talked about Axanar a couple of times and the fallout of Axanar.
But which leads us into the Abrams movies, which is the reboots of the Star Trek movies. Because as you had pointed out, you felt that was the spark that caused the issue with the fan films to get more noticed in a negative way by the Paramount and CBS.
Right.
They
actually leave. And by the way, the technical term for the reboot movies is the Kelvin timeline.
Kelvin. Okay.
Because it's where the timeline branched is with the USS Kelvin.
No.
So.
Not Fahrenheit, but Kelvin.
Right.
So it's the Kelvin films as they are. I didn't mind the first and the third. The second I have issues with, but it's, I think, an accurate description of Omar Star Trek The Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
Because they did a bunch of things to try to bridge that gap for audiences. And I think that they lost a good chunk of what was Star Trek, but they still managed to hold on enough to keep me interested.
Yeah.
But not being a hardcore Trekkie, I could understand hardcore Trekkies not liking that.
Right. Right. And I think one of the problems that I've got with the Kelvin timeline shows is that you kind of need a primer to understand what the message is.
Mm-hmm.
And the message has always been strong in Star Trek is that things need to have a message. And though I absolutely adore Beyond, that was a good movie, and it felt like Star Trek, and it felt like we were back in the same universe. It's the message is really buried, and it takes some work for Simon Pegg and Doug Young to explain to us what the message was. We're not stupid people, but if we need to have an explanation and a primer as to what the message was, then you probably buried it a little too deep. And the problem is that they're trying to make it accessible.
And right. By burying the message, they're kind of like saying there's not a message.
Or we don't think that the dumb people are going to like the message, so we bury it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it seems like that makes the wrong statement about the people.
Yeah.
Which, in a way, kind of makes me feel like that's not the way that Trekkies should be behaving.
It's not a choice you'd think Roddenberry would make.
Right. We think that there's hope in humanity and move forward and we're all going to be better tomorrow and da-da-da-da-da as a general rule. And so I kind of feel like that's not a good statement to make about people in a general rule. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Where do you think the fourth film should go?
Apparently the fourth film is going to go back to visiting George Kirk. That should be interesting, especially since, as I recall, he died.
He got blewed up.
He got blewed up.
A spoiler. That happens like the first 5 minutes of the first
movie. So. I mean, he doesn't even last 5 minutes. And you'd think, if you're Thor, you'd survive.
Yeah.
But apparently not.
Nope.
Starships kill Thor. So,
An alternate timeline Thor. So.
Right. Maybe it's because he didn't have his hammer.
Well, there you go.
There you go. That's why. So anyway, let's move on a little bit to Discovery.
Discovery, the supposedly new show that's going to be coming out by CBS on CBS Direct.
Which we know very, very little about.
I knew little because I'm not a Trekkie.
Yeah, no, even the Trekkies, we know very, very little about it. Which is scaring them because we haven't seen sets, we haven't seen uniforms, we haven't seen anything
have
to show.
Actors been named?
We haven't seen anything about actors being picked. Oh. We haven't seen.
You would think IMDb. I can't talk. IMDb, the
would have it all.
Would have it all because they get stuff years in advance.
Because originally it was coming out in January, but now it's been moved to May, and we're worried that they're going to move it again. And then we're hearing little things like we're hearing from the head of the Department of CBS that he doesn't think Star Trek would make it in regular TV. Mm-hmm. Well, the question is, does he think it's going to work on all access? Are they just going to cancel it before it can come out? And that would really be sad. But there are some interesting things that I'm hearing from this. One, he also said that because Star Trek is not going to be on regular TV, they can have nudity and language if they wanted.
Hmm.
And there's been a lot of backlash from the Trekkies on that one. And I'm thinking, actually, no. There are a lot of things that we can't explore because we can't show nudity. There are a lot of things we can't explore. I don't think that language is necessarily something we need in Star Trek, but I think if Roddenberry could have, he would have gotten away with nudity.
Well, Bones sure would be cursing up a storm. He took it as close as he could.
Right. Well, and they curse a little bit in Beyond.
Yeah.
And it becomes funny because that's always been the humor. It's been humorous whenever a character curses in Star Trek because it's out of place. If you're going to keep that in there, then that it's going to not be out of place and it's not going to be funny and then it's going to be weird.
I could see where the concern would come, though. They don't want it to go the way of Game of Thrones.
Right.
They don't, because if you read the books and watched the TV show, you know that they throw on a bunch of nudity that wasn't even in the books.
Right.
And so it'd be all of a sudden, hey, let's come up with a race that's totally nude. What's the reason? Well, because we want nude people around. And that's as far as the reason goes. So hopefully they don't use it tool to get
Deltons,
viewership.
Deltons have always been, you know, princess. Oh my God! I just crossed the streams.
You did. You exploded.
Ilea from the motion picture. Mm-hmm. She was Delton, and she even said, "I've taken a vow of celibacy." Well, that can only mean one thing, which means that she is normally not celibate.
Right.
Right. I mean, you know, and so there's something about
Orion's slave girls.
If Orion's slave girls could be naked, they would be naked. And so that I can see that there's points in Star Trek which would be appropriate for nudity. I think you're right. If they just had a character that was naked all the time just because they're naked all the time.
Right.
Betazoids get married in the nude. Mm-hmm. That's been a joke all along. The Ferengi don't let their women wear clothes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a common thing. So there's implied nudity has been around for a long time.
Right.
Dabo girls barely wear clothing all the way across the board because the Ferengi.
If Guy has not yet proven his trekkiness to you, I don't know what will.
I know. So I can think of a number of instances where it would be appropriate. As long as they don't let it go to, like, you know, the first officer never wears clothing because her planet never lets her wear clothing. Well, that might be a little excessive.
Yeah.
You know.
And for violence, they obviously would have to make sure they don't do, because they could have a whole scene with, like, Khan with a baseball bat interrogating the crew, and it could get out of control.
It could.
So they got to watch the doing it for the sake of doing it versus doing it to serve the story.
Right. What we know is that the show is likely going to be centering around or near the character number one, which was a character that showed up in The Cage, played by Majel Barrett Roddenberry. She was Majel Barrett at the time.
So is the timeline taking place in the same time as the original series?
It's supposed to be 10 years before.
Okay.
So,
how many years was Enterprise before the original series?
100.
100, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, well, I don't know. I'm
interested.
Hoping that they don't kill.
Yeah,
they kill it off before it gets started.
I would like to see
sad.
A show that I really love is called Black Mirror, and it's a British show. It's on Netflix, written and directed by Charlie Brooker. It's very Twilight Zone-esque. It's very much an anthology. They occasionally will pull in little Easter eggs of other episodes.
Yeah,
but they're not at all important to the story that you have to know. It's more of just an acknowledgement that it's all happening in the same universe.
Well, and there was talk about it being an anthology Discovery.
I would really like to see an anthology because then you could explore a whole lot. We could open it up to different captains every time.
Right.
And then different races for each ship. You could follow a Klingon ship from one episode and a Ferengi ship for another episode.
Sure.
But if they're already having concerns about viewership and making money, that goes against the cookie cutter rule of making a show. You've got to have
right.
A
but you could
cast.
You could almost do what we're doing with our GURPS game. Make a prime team. It yeah. moves from ship to ship and solves problems. In the Federation, you could have a different ship every time. They've already said that Discovery is not going to center around a captain. It's going to center around a character that's a secondary character, like.
If you were to make it off of a role-playing game, you would first have to cast Neil Patrick Harris as my character because he's based off of Barney Stinson.
Right.
And then you'd have to call it How I Met Your Ship's Captain. Right. Or How I Met Your Captain.
Right. How I Met Your Captain. Okay, well, that's our little exploration into Star Trek. I hope that enlightened everybody. Because, certainly... Well, anyway. Okay, so... You can talk to us on Twitter at RMGeekTank or Facebook at Facebook.com/RockyMountainGeekTank. Or you can email us at questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. Just be sure to search for Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, and we should appear right there in search engine. And give us stars and likes. You can also subscribe and follow us on our webpage and Facebook and all that stuff, and keep up on top of whenever something new comes out. You'll get a little notification that it happened.
Right. Special thanks to our guests, the Tribbles. You can find them at tribbles.tribbles.tribbles.tribbles.tribbles. And that's all the time we have for today. I've been Guy.
I've been Troy.
And this is Geek Tank.
Geek Tank is a production of Fox Blade Media and is protected under the Creative Commons 3.0 license. Your hosts today were Guy S. Davis and C. Troy Floor. Kevin Weibler is our engineer. And our music was composed by David Coyle. If you like what you are hearing, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/foxblade. I'm Mike Davis, hoping you live long and prosper. Good night.